True Seekers, your humble and obedient servant here. My name is Mike Malloy. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, have you noticed something? Have you figured this out yet? The Republicans are always talking, and some conservative Democrats too, Barack Obama maybe. But they're always talking about how the corporations are the job creators, right? That's why they're not creating jobs right now, is because, well, they've got trillions of dollars they're sitting on, and they're real uncertain about all the rules and regulations and what's going to happen. But they're always referred to as job creators, even after they show over and over again that they are, in fact, job cutters. Hello? The job creators that send everything overseas? Oh, they create jobs, all right, but they create the jobs in China, Vietnam, India, pick a country. But as far as America is concerned, the job creators are in fact job cutters, and nobody really seems to want to talk about that very much. I mean, out on the campaign stump, it's always, well, you know, the job creators. We gotta live. That's all they talked about last night. Especially Sic Santorum talking about, well, if I'm president, there'll be zero taxes, zero this, zero that, no rules, no regulations. Perry jumped in. We'll get rid of everything, every burden on corporate America. But boys, and that's what you are, boys, little schoolyard boys, the corporations you're talking about are the ones that are cutting the jobs. They don't create the jobs. They end the jobs. Thousands, hundreds of them, millions of them. Oh, never mind. This hour is sponsored by Anthony Leppert. Leppert, with a T on the end, not Leppard. Anthony Leppert. And his message, happiest birthday wishes to Sarah Leppert. Now that's sweet. Thank you, Anthony. Happy birthday, Sarah. We'll do that a couple more times this hour. Happy birthday to Sarah Leppert. From Paris, thanks to Bill. This is on the Dow Jones Wire. This is kind of scary, but don't leave as soon as you hear this. The world is headed for a, quote, dire future, end quote, where high energy prices drag on economic growth and global average temperatures rise by more than 3.5 Celsius, unless there are significant innovations to lower the cost of clean energy and carbon capture technology, said the International Energy Agency today. Speaking at the conclusion of a two-day meeting with international energy ministers and business leaders in Paris, senior officials from the agency painted a gloomy picture of the world's current trajectory. It said growth in energy demand will be powered largely by coal. And the only hope of restraining the rise in global temperatures to safe levels is to create cheaper technologies to capture the carbon dioxide coal produces. Dire picture. But Bill also sent me this from Austin, Texas. The city of Austin, starting the first of this month, the city of Austin, Texas, moved to 100% clean and renewable energy. Is that for real? Produced at wind farms in West Texas and purchased from a publicly owned publicly owned. That's communism. Yeah. Well, no, it's socialism. A publicly owned utility company. The city of Austin is now subscribing to approximately 400 million kilowatt hours of renewable energy. According to an announcement by the city, and officials believe Austin has become the largest U.S. city that's consuming 100% renewables. A publicly owned utility company. Austin Energy is acquiring the renewable energy for the city under the utility company's voluntary green pricing program. The renewable energy is approximately 5.7 cents per kilowatt hour and 2.5 cents more than the standard charge for residential customers. Austin will be locked into the green rate for 10 years, the city said. How about that? So the price doubles from 2.5 cents per kilowatt hour to 5.7 cents per kilowatt hour. But it's 100% of Austin, Texas's official power source. And it is a publicly owned utility. Well, I'll tell you, hats off to Austin, Texas. I hadn't heard a thing about this. Have you? Anybody heard about this? Phew. What else? Oh, from Bruce. No, Mike, you're looking at those damn trees. There's a forest behind them. What he's talking about is my constant harping on that capitalism is dead. It's collapsing. It's going nowhere. It has run its course. And Bruce writes, capitalism is not collapsing. It's doing very, very well. I've been watching this coming for 40 years. This has been the plan all along. The pretense that capitalism serves anybody but the top 1% is what is collapsing. The only question is, will the 99% catch on that it is not natural that the middle class is simply disappearing? What really frightens me, Bruce writes, is that the capitalists may engineer a respite from the decline to sufficient to lull everybody into complacency again while they continue to consolidate power. From Prairie 2, Bruce. No, Mike, you're looking at those damn trees. There's a forest behind them. Capitalism is not collapsing. Well, I meant what you put in this quick email, Bruce. That's exactly what I meant. What is collapsing is the pretense that capitalism serves anybody but the top 1%. But, of course, you put it in the proper grammatical structure and language. Nah, it's collapsing. I'm sorry. No, Bruce, it's collapsing. And from Jim in Kentucky. Oh, my God, this has been sitting here for 5 days. From Jim in Kentucky. Like Al Gore said, in the long run, the planet will be fine. It's the human race that's at risk. Maybe it's trying to spit us out. That's right. Al Gore did say that, didn't he? Yeah. Global warming is not going to destroy the planet. It's just going to destroy, you know. And, oh, yeah, last night, I missed this last night. Somebody sent this to me, but, and I actually heard her say it. It just boom, boom, just, I wasn't listening that close, I guess. It reminded me of a phone call I got one time when I was referring to something going on in Egypt, as being in Africa, and an irate woman wrote to me and said, you know, this just shows how stupid you liberals are. You know, you're talking about Egypt. Egypt is not part of Africa, you know. You remember that, Gabby? Well, Bachman last night criticized Obama's foreign policy, saying, quote, now with the president, he put us in Libya, and now he's putting us in Africa. We already were stretched too thin, and he put our special operation forces in Africa. End quote. Michelle, stupid woman, Libya is in Africa. Not that, you know, the essence of her statement is right, but rather than say, like Ron Paul would say, for example, you know, the stopped clock that's right twice a day, Ron Paul, rather than just say, let's bring the troops home, this is ridiculous. Bachman turns it into something where she can display her ignorance, I guess. I don't know. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. All right. It's time for your the Fright Night section of the program brought to you courtesy of Prairie 2. His subject line, disturbing numbers from the Office of the Comptroller of Currency. Radio talk host version. Run, hide. Here it is. The first domino in the next big crash appears to be leaning toward the taxpayers, and it's a monolith of immense proportions. Bank of America, that was until recently the world's largest bank, has moved $75 trillion worth of derivatives from its Merrill Lynch division to a division with FDIC-insured deposits. They did this following a downgrade of their credit rating last month. The only reason to do such a thing is to try to shift the deck chairs around to make up for the hard list the ship is having after hitting that pesky iceberg. Reports are that the FDIC is beside itself about the risk this poses for taxpayers who would be on the hook to cover deposits should the old rust bucket head for the bottom. We wouldn't be on the hook for anything like $75 trillion, of course, only for the insured deposits. However, Bank of America holds 14% of all U.S. bank deposits. How much of this would be covered isn't clear, nor can we guess how much damage the loss of the remaining uninsured deposits would do to businesses, municipalities, and the like, who would exceed FDIC limits. To cover all deposits would take a new act of Congress. In a normal insured default, the bank itself would be seized, the stockholders wiped out, and the management fired. Bank of America management has already allocated billions in bonuses, even as the company hemorrhages an equal number of billions. Here's a term from contract law, clawback. Or the principle of not letting the bastards get away with the money. This wasn't done after the last crash because the Bush crime family wasn't interested. The new, at the time, Obama administration couldn't or wouldn't do anything about it, but instead let the banks pretend to pay back the TARP money so that they were out from under government scrutiny. The whole scam appears about to repeat itself. It's hard to say how long this could take to play out, but if, like Lehman Brothers, there is a demand for payment by the counterparties of the $75 trillion in derivatives, or even a small fraction of that as collateral, then Bank of America would cease to exist. It could happen over a single weekend, the way J.P. Morgan ate Lehman's lunch, and they have now passed Bank of America to become the largest of the too big to fail banks. Coincidentally, the report from the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency shows that J.P. Morgan currently has $79 trillion in derivatives. And people wonder, let me digress, people wonder why I scream about capitalism. People wonder what the Occupy here and Occupy there is all about. Oh, for Christ's sake, wake up and smell the brimstone, will ya? Back to Prairie 2. Under the Dodd-Frank Act, there's supposed to be an orderly wind down of these big banks when they fail. This is to be conducted by the FDIC, the same as they do it with small banks. It's questionable if they are in any position to make it work in a timely fashion, as the framework under the Dodd-Frank Act for this hasn't been completed. And it's never been done before on such a monster. Banks a fraction of the size have created panic. Or even if the FDIC has enough money to pay the depositors, nobody knows. There are calls to simply break up Bank of America and not wait for it to fail. But I suspect that doomed ship sailed long ago. As far as the FDIC being capable, the Congress did authorize $500 billion line of credit for the FDIC a couple of years ago. This may not be enough, especially if the contagion spreads to the other big four banks that account for something like two-thirds of all bank assets in the U.S. Who knows what the teabag Congress might choose to do if regulators show up with their begging bowl wanting some serious pocket change. If Republicans treat the country to the sort of nonsense they put on display during the debt ceiling default crisis, they would certainly trigger a worldwide bank panic or worse. Run. Run. Hide. Prairie 2. Jesus, God. I never thought I would laugh at someone who is constantly predicting and getting damn close to a doomsday. He's like, who's the character? Is it from Greek mythology? Who?
Cassandra?
No, Cassandra. Was it Cassandra? I don't know. I thought it was a man who wandered around, and every place he went, the crops would wither, the livestock would die, and everybody would get, you know, very, very sick.
Dick Cheney.
Oh, Dick Cheney. Oh, okay. Well, I knew it was right on the tip of my tongue. I knew it was somebody. All right. We'll take a break and come back. And this is Wednesday night. It's church night. So stick around. We have not a whole lot of church night tonight. I don't know. There's nothing all that good out there this week, except, you know, except for the fact that the bishop of what, Topeka, has been indicted. Charges of covering up. Why am I laughing? This is about child sexual abuse. I'm not laughing. I'm not. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Inside you're gonna feel right at home. Welcome to my nightmare.
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Five before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Anthony Leffert. Thank you, Anthony. His message is happiest birthday wishes to Sarah Leppard. Thank you, Anthony. Happy birthday, Sarah. It's church night. I have a request here for equal opportunity for synagogue night. Okay. Stephen in Burbank wrote in for church night. Mike, in Proverbs, there's a little ditty that goes something like this. When you lend, do not expect to be paid back. Consider it to be a gift. If you are paid back, then do not extract interest. There might be a lot of juvenile sophistry in trying to connect this Judeo-Christian ethic with what's happening in the streets all over the world. Of course, this notion is obviously silly and naive. Then again, maybe not. Remember, those valid moral precepts were in existence long before man created God and religion. Stephen and Burbank. In the predominantly Orthodox Jewish neighborhood of South Williamsburg, where is that, in the Bronx? Is that in the Bronx or in Brooklyn? I don't know. Where's South Williamsburg? It doesn't matter. It's New York City. Anyway, in that predominantly Orthodox Jewish neighborhood, earlier this week, the Parks Department removed 16 controversial signs that were, tacked to trees and signposts and so on and so forth. And they were written in, the signs were written in Hebrew. And actually Yiddish, I guess. And they were screwed to public trees, with screws. The Yiddish signs first reported on Failed Messiah, that's a blog, roughly translated, the signs translated to, quote, "Precious Jewish daughter, please move to the side when a man approaches." Exclamation point. The New York Daily News checked in on the neighborhood and finds that some of the locals feel the city is suppressing their civil liberties. A 170-year-old woman told the Daily News, quote, "It's taking away freedom of speech." Another local resident, 18-year-old Abraham Klein, said, quote, "The signs don't bother anybody. Men and ladies don't go together. It's just our religion," end quote. Woman, move! Okay. Brooklyn, thank you. Not the Bronx, Brooklyn. And then there's this. The women who are riding the Brooklyn B110 bus that connects South Williamsburg and Borough Park, according to the blog Gothamist, seems like any other bus. It has a route number and blue bus stop signs like any other city bus and is open to the public. But the B110 is operated by a private company called Private Transportation Corporation, which pays the city for the right to provide a public service. And reporter Sasha Chavkin finds that on this bus, which caters to a predominantly Orthodox Jewish ridership, special rules apply. Namely, women get the Rosa Parks treatment. Ms. Chavkin recently asked an acquaintance to ride the B110 and found that female passengers are asked to sit in the back. His canary in the Hasidic coal mine. Oh, I like that. That's pretty cool. Encountered a bus filled with Orthodox Jews with full beard, side curls, and long black coats, who told her that she was riding a private bus and a Jewish bus. When she asked why she had to move, a man scolded her, explaining, "If God makes the rule, you don't ask why I make the rule." I love it. A female New York Post reporter had a similar experience when she sat in the front of the B110, where signs written in Hebrew and English also direct women, "Use the back door!" Department of Transportation spokesman Seth Solomnow tells us, quote, "This bus route is operated pursuant to a franchise which was publicly and competitively solicited. There's no cost to the city for the maintenance or operation of this unsubsidized service operated by private transportation, which is available to public use." Damn, first the city makes the Hasidim take down their street signs ordering precious Jewish daughters to make room for men on the sidewalk, and now this. What's next? They're not allowed to put up signs warning everyone that gay marriage leads to pedophilia. Oh, God. All right. Now, I never claimed that, just the crazy Christians had exclusive franchise on this religious madness. As a matter of fact, the Orthodox Jews and Muslims, or is it Orthodox Muslim? Not Orthodox, but the very religious, the, you know what I mean. are pretty much the same way. All three religions of Abraham are so anti-woman as to, I mean, they're almost parodies. But Christianity, Judaism, and Islam are all just, you know, women are vessels. Women are to shut up. I mean, when you take a look at the way Saudi women are forced to dress with the full covering just slits for their eyes, we have Muslims of this particular Orthodox bent that go to the farmers market that I'm usually referring to, that I refer to often. It's an international farmers market, so we get all kinds of people in the Atlanta area who go there. And when these women come in, it's really something to see. I mean, it's almost, on the one hand, it's a little spooky. On the other hand, it's kind of, I don't know, it's almost interesting, you know, a little slit for the eyes. And everything else is hands, feet, everything covered in black. It's weird. It's like, weird. And look how the Mormons, remember the big bust when, was it Jeff, whatever, the guy that just got sent to prison? And all the women in his clan had the funky hair style and those long flowing pioneer woman dresses of, you know, muted pastel colors. And when you look at Orthodox Jewish women who come into the stores around here, same thing. Well, not the slits over the eyes, but I mean hair covered, all skin covered, you know, from the neck down and from the, you know, hair covered. And no makeup, nothing, just very, ay, 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 ay. It's so anti-woman. Now, of course, a good Orthodox Jew or a woman, a Jewish woman, or a good Orthodox Muslim woman will tell you that this is the way it should be. This is the natural order of things, right? Hey, fundamentalist Muslims. Is that what I was trying to say? Oh, and of course, the in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, senior pastor to Cedar Rapids Church, a Lutheran church, my goodness, was one of nine men arrested last Friday in a prostitution sting. He was a senior pastor at Trinity Lutheran. He was the first person arrested in the operation conducted by the Marion Police Department and the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation. All the men responded to an advertisement on a website that arranged to meet an undercover female officer who was posing as a prostitute. Well, if she wasn't really a prostitute and no money was paid for sex, what the hell are they going to charge these people with? I'm seriously, seriously. A Marion Police Sergeant Lance Miller, said the pastor arrived at the meeting place and was arrested when he offered money in exchange for a sex act. Well, offered, but I mean, you know, I don't know. Entrapment is kind of weird to me. I guess in some instances it's necessary, especially if you're dealing with pedophiles. But this just, it always seems a little bizarre. Now, the problem here, of course, is, first of all, I would argue, I'm not convinced one way or the other, but I would argue that laws against sex acts between consenting adults, whether they're paid or not paid, are kind of weird. I don't know, that gets into a real strange area, especially when you're talking about women who, in some instances, have been so exploited or so reduced in this society, among others, that sometimes sex for sale seems to be the only way to make a living, whether it is working as a nude dancer in a club or walking the streets as a prostitute. It's a difficult area, I think, for men to argue. It's kind of like talking about abortion. I don't think a male really should have any opinion about that. And I know a lot of men are going to say, yeah, but what if she's carrying my kid? Well, it's not really your kid. I don't know. Okay, that sound you hear is me getting in way over my head. So let's go to commercials.
soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. 999. I'm going to talk about 999 later on tonight. Oh my God. This hour has been sponsored by Anthony Leppert. Thank you, Anthony. And his message is to Sarah Leppert. Happiest birthday wishes. And I will second that emotion, Sarah. Happiest birthday wishes to you. Thanks, Anthony. We appreciate the sponsorship. If you want to be a sponsor, go to MikeMalloy.com. All the information is right there. Sic Santorum recently pledged that he would die on that hill. You know, that's an expression that, Kathy uses that on me a lot. Oh, you always say mountain. I'm not going to die on that mountain. You know, which, you know, if I'm trying to pick a fight with her, she'll come up with that. She'll say, I'm not going to die on that mountain, dude. But Santorum says, I'm not going to die on that hill. And he says he will die on that hill. You know what the hill is? Fighting against same-sex marriage. Okay, you said it, Rick. You're the one who's going to die. Fighting same-sex marriage. You said it, dude. Eh? And he made a similar vow to repeal all federal funding for contraception. Contraception. You know, condoms, birth control pills, patches, sponges. Are IUDs still used? IUDs. Old Sic Santorum, the guy who likes to play with dead babies. Well, they're his dead babies, so I guess he can do anything he wants to with them. But he is going to repeal. Of course, he has nothing to do with it, but he's going to repeal all federal funding. Rick, the President of the United States cannot do a goddamn thing about federal funding. You don't control 10 cents. That's the House of Representatives, Rick? He's going to repeal all federal funding for contraception because contraception is, quote, a license to do things in a sexual realm, end quote. Oh, my God. Contraception is a license to do things in the sexual realm. According to Think Progress, Santorum made these claims during an interview with the editor of CaffeinatedThoughts.com. And he went on to declare that no other president had previously discussed, quote, the dangers of contraception, end quote. And he said that, quote, sex is supposed to be within marriage, end quote, and, quote, special, end quote. Really? Oh, my God. I didn't know that. And then this moron goes out of his way to make it impossible for 15-20% of the population ever to get married. But anyway, he then went on to describe what he calls the battle on same-sex marriage, claiming that allowing gay marriage would shake, quote, the very foundation of our country, the family, what the family structure is going to look like. End quote. It's just unbelievable. I mean, this interest in somebody else's sex life that these perverted right-wing religious thug fanatics like Sic Santorum, you just know that this guy has a porn collection that probably fills up his basement. You know he does. All kinds of porn. I just hope that this sick son of a bitch doesn't have any child porn, but eventually he's going to be found out. You know it. I know it. And then he's going to, you know, stand there with his old lady and they're going to say, oh, well, Jesus already forgave him. You know. It's, you know, this is the same freak I told you the other night. He claims that the base of the Democratic Party is single mothers who run a household. And he said, why? Quote, because it's so tough economically that they look to the government to help, and therefore they're going to vote. So if you want to reduce the Democratic advantage, what you want to do is build two-parent families. You eliminate that desire for government. This guy, I mean, where do these people come from? What rock do they slither out from under? It's astonishing. When you put sand, you put them all up there, including this cowardly bastard, Mitt, who is running away from his own record in Massachusetts. Just running like his ass is on fire. Just, And you put him up there with the other ones. I mean, what a collection of just ciphers, zeros. I don't know what they are. What are they talking about? Rick Santorum gets all gray and ashy when he starts talking about same-sex marriage and homosexuals and condoms and birth control. And first thing you know it, they'll be doing things in a sexual realm. Well, I'll tell you what, Sick, that, you know, that sexual realm is a pretty groovy place. I think Sick Santorum and his wife, somebody should find real good, competent, child care for their kids. I think they have, 30 kids or something. And then take Sick and his wife and take them, I don't know, somewhere up in the Himalayas, just not, the only reason being it would be a good place to be isolated from the rest of humanity, and stick them in a tantric Buddhism temple for, for a year. I think that would fix Rick Santorum. You think? Probably not. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Michael, his message today is my birthday, but the best birthday gift I can receive is listening to the best show on radio. Thank you, Malloy, for fighting the good fight. Kind message indeed, Michael, and happy birthday to you. Thanks for the sponsorship, Michael. And my little tirade about the three peoples of the book and their religions, the Jews, Muslims, and Christians, their anti-woman stance. Joan writes in and she quotes a passage from Aeschylus, the Greek playwright, his famous Oresteia, which I think was a couple of a trilogy. How's that? This is Apollo speaking. Apollo, for God's sake. Here is the truth. I tell you, see how right I am. The woman you call the mother of the child is not the parent, just a nurse to the seed, the new-sown seed that grows and swells inside her. The man is the source of life, the one who mounts. She, like a stranger for a stranger, keeps the shoot alive unless God hurts the roots. Women don't have a chance, right? Even the ancient Greeks, who'd have thunk it? Who'd have thunk it? And yet, of course, that, you know, Aeschylus was just a playwright. I mean, you know, come on. You know, the Greeks had many, 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 many female gods. Of course, you know, the head cheese certainly was not, but, I mean, it was not a woman, but there were many female gods in the Greek pantheon and the Roman pantheon, right? But I get the point, Joan, and yes, here's the truth. The woman is just a nurse to the seed. Ouch! What do you think of that, Kathy?
We're scary.
It's what?
We're scary. We terrify men.
Open your mic and because it's easier to...
We're scary. We terrify men. Men fear us. I.e., they have to demonize us.
I see.
Because we hold the power to life.
Oh, I see.
Period. Give a woman anything and she makes it bigger. You give her sperm, she gives you a baby. You give her food,
yeah.
She gives you a gourmet meal.
Yeah.
You know, you give her any crap, you're going to get a load of it back.
I see. Okay. All right. I should have let that sleeping dog lie. What else we got here? Oh yeah, Michigan. The minute Michigan Senate Committee on Reforms, Restructuring, and Reinventing. How's that? Today approved a couple of bills in the Michigan Senate that would eliminate health care benefits for unmarried partners of public employees across the state. No more! These two bills prohibit any government entity in the state from providing such benefits and prohibit unions from including them in collective bargaining agreements. And, of course, the bills passed along party lines. The Michigan House of Representatives passed the bills in September. So now it's up to the Stalinist governor of Michigan to sign them into law. Anti-gay Republican Representative Dave Ajima, who is the bill's sponsor, and Attorney General Bill Schuette have been trying to strip away health care benefits for gay and lesbian couples since February. So they go after everybody. See, they can't just take, these are sick, really. These are subhuman sick sons of bitches, aren't they? You goddamn queers! You're not gonna have any health care! Pigs. Just, I mean, where do these people come from? Where does Dave Ajima and Attorney General Bill Shute, what do they gain? Do they get points with Jesus for doing this? I mean, does God put little gold stars after their name in whatever book in paradise they think they're being recorded? What is it? Or is it just a pure hatred of people who are different? Is it because there's no such thing as good to these guys, as good porn, unless it's a couple of women? But, you know, there's a couple of men together, and then what? Oh my God. Does it arouse you boys? Is that what it is? Eh? A statement from Emily Devendorf, who is the director of policy of Equality Michigan. Quote, Republican lawmakers continue to attack hardworking gay and transgender people rather than focusing on real issues. They're ignoring best practices in business and promoting a hostile environment for gay and lesbian couples. We hope that voters question where lawmakers' real priorities are. The statement goes on, tens of thousands of public and private employees in our state have access to health care benefits for domestic partners. This legislation will have a devastating impact. This is a crucial issue for Michigan. Do we really want to be known as a state with such a regressive legislature that we deny equal access to health care benefits? Oh, please, Emily, come on. Of course. Of course. Maybe the citizens of Michigan, although I tend to believe the citizens of Michigan would deny equal rights to anybody except themselves. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, do we really want to be known as a state with a regressive legislature? Blah, blah, blah. Michigan Republicans are ready to close the door for gay and lesbian couples who want to live here, even if it means dictating human resources policy for local governments. And then, as a point of fact, over 900,000 Michigan employees of private companies are eligible to offer health care benefits to their domestic partners, gay or straight. Over 20 major corporations provide such benefits, including Ford, General Motors, Chrysler, Dow Chemical, Whirlpool. Several public entities representing tens of thousands of workers provide such benefits for domestic partners of employees, including the state of Michigan. That's soon going to be gone. At least 10 public universities. That'll probably be gone. At least 5 city and county governments. There that goes. And at least 3 public school districts. Bada bing, bada boom. The Stalinist right-wingers strike again. Rick Santorum says he will die on that hill, preventing gay folk from having the right to form a legal contract where they plight their troths. I've never been able to understand the sickness that is these anti-gay attitudes. And it is a sickness. It is a deep and abiding sickness. And apparently it's a kind of sickness that it's almost like an addiction. It does not respond to any kind of specific treatment except maybe long-term therapy. And the first thing required is to get the victim, the addict, the one who's addicted to anti-gay attitudes, get them away from the source of their addiction. For people who are addicted to alcohol, it's booze. To heroin, it's a needle. To these people, it's their churches. Get them out of the church. Get them away from this poisonous, hate-filled religious garbage that is anti-woman, anti-gay, anti-this, anti-that, anti-everything, pro-death, devourers of corpses, drinkers of blood. You people are sick in the head. You are sick in the head. When you die, you are going to be obliterated. You are not going to step off your cloud and find 70 virgins or Peter, Paul, and Mary waiting for you, whoever it is. Is it Peter, Paul, and Mary? Peter, Paul, and somebody. You're not going to find that. You're not going to find anything. There is going to be cosmic oblivion. You go back to being star substance, you freaks, you crazy anti-life freaks, you.
Better take a minute or two to read that book again. Yeah, you won't purge those demons with 1,000 half-ton bombs. This ain't no TV movie, not a news show or sitcom. It's misery, and can't you see how weary and how sad? How disappointed I am after the golden chance you've had. Those soldiers are son by son, their father's uncles too. If you've been born a second later, that just might be you. You prayed for a way to forgive your latest enemy. Well, then do not do it in my name. Yeah, don't blame it on me. Yeah, please don't do it in my name. Don't blame it. No, no.
It's Mike Malloy.
We were young together. We were on the ball. We did not believe.
21 past the hour.
We did our best work in the dark. We did our thinking on the run.
Yeah, it's time to drop this into the conversation.
Will they hang us one by one?
Is this from Rich? This is written in 1933. By U.S. Marine General Smedley Butler, two-time Medal of Honor winner, who knows more about bravery in combat than any randomly picked 200,000 Republicans or right-wingers or teabaggers, whatever you want to call them. And most of you are familiar with this, but for the occasional troll who drifts in and out of the XM or Sirius bandwave and picks up this program, go, whoa, whoa, what the hell's that? All right, here you go. War is a racket. It always has been. It is possibly the oldest, easily the most profitable, surely the most vicious. It is the only one international in scope. This is written in 1933. It is the only one in which the profits are reckoned in dollars and the losses in lives. A racket is best described, I believe, as something that is not what it seems to the majority of the people. Only a small inside group knows what it is about. It is conducted for the benefit of the very few at the expense of the very many. Out of war, a few people make huge profits. I spent 33 years and 4 months in active military service, and during that period, I spent most of my time as a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street, and the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism. I helped make Mexico, and especially Tampico, safe for American oil interests in 1914. I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National Citibank boys to collect revenues in. I helped in the raping of half a dozen Central American republics for the benefit of Wall Street. I helped purify Nicaragua for the international banking house of Brown Brothers in 1902 all the way up to 1912. I brought light to the Dominican Republic for the American sugar interests in 1916. I helped make Honduras right for the American fruit companies in 1903. In China in 1927, I helped see to it that Standard Oil went on its way unmolested. Looking back on it, I might have given Al Capone a few hints. The best he could do was to operate his racket in three districts. I operated on three continents. Our foreign policy has always been geared toward gathering as much of the world's resources unto ourselves at the expense of others. The true purpose of our armed forces is to make the world safe for our big boss, the supranationalistic capitalism, and our cultural and economic assault. We are a nation of money and war racketeers and gangsters for capitalism. What we do is evil. Wow. A Marine general. Combat veteran. Two-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner. International capitalism, eh, General? What we do is evil. Astonishing, isn't it? So the struggle did not start with the occupation of Wall Street or Washington or L.A. or wherever. The struggle has been going on ever since Teddy Roosevelt and the boys decided to rig up a bombing in Havana Harbor and make it look as though an American ship or somebody's ship had been blown up by those dirty, rotten Cubans. You know, the Spanish-American War. Boy, that unleashed the dogs out of hell, didn't it? Huh? You know, that quote from this two-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner, General Smedley Butter, United States Marine Corps. Why isn't that posted in every single recruiting office across the country? Every single one. You know why as well as I do. Hell, who would join up? Except people who got a kick out of murdering other people. And yet, you know, we still have a political class that insists that our heroes We send our boys and girls off, and they fight for freedom, and mom and dad, and the right to wear white shoes after Labor Day. We'll be right back.
Listen to right-wing radio. God kills a kitten.
Twenty-five before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Michael Calloway. Thank you, Michael. His message, today's my birthday, but the best birthday gift I can receive is listening to the best show on radio. Thank you, Malloy, for fighting the good fight. Thank you, Michael, for, with your contribution, keeping this, your sponsorship, keeping this program going. We appreciate it very much. When injustice becomes law, resistance becomes duty. That's one of the signs that Occupy Wall Street. A friend just sent me a bunch of photos, 89 photos. One of my daughters is going to be there on Friday. And the person that sent me the photos, it was their daughter who took these. When injustice becomes law, resistance becomes duty. How true. Here's a little enlightenment. That's how I took this. It's an email from Jerry in Laramie, Wyoming. Jerry writes, "Hi, I'm a longtime listener and first time emailer, except for a couple of text messages. The reason that prompted this letter is based on living in Nebraska during the 70s and 80s and being familiar with things happening there and relevant events happening now. During the 1970s, in the process of graduating from the University of Nebraska, a colleague of mine and his brother owned a small production company that produced a few commercials for Godfather's Pizza. The owner of Godfather's Pizza was a man named Willie Thiessen, T-H-E-I-S-E-N, Willie Thiessen or Thiessen. Willie was the primary person who built Godfather's Pizza from a small business into a large corporation with numerous pizza outlets, primarily in the Midwest. He sold Godfather's Pizza to Pillsbury and then used his newfound wealth to build a 20,000-plus square foot mansion in West Omaha. Enter Herman Cain, hired by Pillsbury Corporation to build Godfather's into a more profitable subsidiary sometime in the mid-'80s. This lasted until 1994 when Herman became a Republican activist, Washington lobbyist, and advocate for lower corporate tax responsibility. It is my conclusion that Herman Cain was not an effective CEO for Godfather's Pizza. How many outlets do you see around today?" That's true. "My answer is not many, or a lot fewer. I understand the reason Pillsbury hired Cain to lead Godfather's was the good job Cain did with Burger King in the Philadelphia area. The only marketing strategy Burger King uses for determining plant locations, build it next to a McDonald's. Thank you and keep up the good work. It's your program that gives me hope that we may have a future, Jerry." Laramie, Wyoming. Yeah, I didn't take a look at this, but I mean, research it on Wiki or wherever. But is that true? Is that the truth, Jerry? Certainly have no reason to disbelieve it. I'm not the least bit surprised. I hadn't heard that before. The image I have is this struggling minority business person busting his hump to build, to build up a pizza business. Let's do a real quick. Yeah, let's see what we can come up with here. Where is it? All right, let's do it this way. Here we go. Godfather's Pizza. Let's see what Wikipedia says. Don't go away. I'm just have to do this. Godfather's was founded in Omaha, Nebraska in 1973. In the early 70s, William Thiessen owned a beer parlor named Wild Willie's next to a pizza restaurant named Godfather's. Thiessen bought out the pizza parlor and the name in 1974 and sold his first franchise. Thiessen sold the company to Pillsbury in the mid-80s and stepped down from actively managing the company. In 1986, Pillsbury named Herman Cain CEO and president of the brand. Cain, in turn, led a group to purchase the Godfather's brand from Pillsbury, which they did by the beginning of 1990. Well, there you go. Didn't you have the impression, Kathy, that, you know, this struggling so-called minority businessman was just determined to build up his pizza business? Didn't you? I mean, wasn't that the image that you had? Sure was the image that I had. Oh, God. I want to mention Naomi Wolf was arrested at Occupy Wall Street on last night. Naomi Wolf, of course, the American author, political consultant. She wrote several books, one of which is The End of America, A Letter of Warning to a Young Patriot. And in that book, Wolf looks at the rise of fascism, and she outlines the 10 steps necessary for a fascist group to destroy the democratic character of a nation state and subvert the socio-political liberty previously exercised by its citizens. We talked about this before. The first thing, invoke a terrifying internal and external enemy. Second, create secret prisons where torture takes place. Third, develop a thug caste or paramilitary force not answerable to citizens. Fourth, set up an internal surveillance system. Fifth, harass citizens groups. Sixth, engage in arbitrary detention and release. Seven, target key individuals. Eight, control the press. Nine, treat all political dissidents as traitors. And 10, suspend the rule of law. The book details how this pattern was put into play by Nazi Germany and fascist Italy and elsewhere, and analyzes its emergence and application in American political affairs since the September 11 attacks. Naomi Wolf, in her own words, "Last night I was arrested in my hometown outside an event to which I had been invited for standing lawfully on the sidewalk in an evening gown. Let me explain. My partner and I were attending an event for the Huffington Post, for which I often write. Game Changers 2011 in a venue space on Hudson Street. As we entered the space, we saw that about 200 Occupy Wall Street protesters were peacefully assembled and were chanting. They wanted to address Governor Andrew Cuomo, who was going to be arriving at the event. They were using a technique that has become known as the human mic, by which the crowd laboriously repeats every word the speaker says, since they had been told that using real megaphones was illegal. In my book, Give Me Liberty, A Blueprint for How to Open Up a Closing Civil Society, I have a chapter on permits, which is a crucial subject to understand for anyone involved in protest in the U.S. In 70s America, protests used to be very effective. But in subsequent decades, municipalities have sneakily created a web of over-permiticization requirements that were designed to stifle freedom of assembly and the right to petition government for redress of grievances, both of which are part of our First Amendment. One of these made-up permit requirements, which are not transparent or accountable, is the megaphone restriction. So I informed the group on Hudson Street that they had a First Amendment right to use a megaphone and that the National Lawyers Guild should appeal the issue if they got arrested. And I repeated the words of the First Amendment, which the crowd also repeated. Then my partner suggested that I ask the group for their list of demands. Since we would be inside, we thought it would be helpful to take their list into the event. And if I had a chance to talk with the governor, I would pass the list on. That is how democracy works, right? The people have the right to address their representatives. We went inside, chatted with our friends, but needed to leave before the governor had arrived. I decided I would present their list to his office in the morning and write about the response. On our exit, I saw that the protesters had been cordoned off by a now massive phalanx of NYPD cops and pinned against the far side of the street, far away from the event they sought to address. I went up and asked them why. They replied that they had been informed that the Huffington Post event had a permit that forbade them to use the sidewalk. I knew from my investigative reporting on New York City permits that this was impossible. A private entity cannot lease a public sidewalk. Even film crews must allow pedestrian traffic. I asked the police for clarification. No response. I went over to the sidewalk at issue, and identified myself as a New York City citizen and a reporter, and asked to see the permit in question or to locate the source on the police or event side that claimed it forbade citizens access to a public sidewalk. Finally, a tall man who seemed to be with the event confessed that while it did have a permit, the permit did allow for protests so long as we did not block pedestrian passage. I thanked him, returned to the protesters, and said, "This permit allows us to walk on the other side of the street. If we don't block access, I am now going to walk on the public sidewalk and not block it. It is legal to do so. Please join me if you wish." My partner and I then returned to the event side of the sidewalk and began to walk peacefully, arm in arm, while about 30 or 40 people walked with us in single file, not blocking sidewalk access. Hold the thought. We'll be right back. Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Michael Calloway. Thank you, Michael. His message today is my birthday, but the best radio gift I can receive is listening to the best show on radio. Thank you, Malloy, for fighting the good fight. Thank you, Michael. All right. Naomi Wolf and 30 or 40 people walking single file down the street in New York, not blocking access on the sidewalk. She goes on, then a phalanx of perhaps 40 white-shirted senior police officers descended out of seemingly nowhere, and with a megaphone, which was supposedly illegal for citizens to use, one said, "You're unlawfully creating a disruption. You are ordered to disperse." I approached him peacefully, slowly, gently, and respectfully, and said, "I am confused. I was told that the permit in question allows us to walk if we don't block pedestrian access. As you see, we are complying with the permit." YouTube footage of Naomi Klein being arrested is available if you want to find it. Anyway, he gave me a look of pure hate. "Are you going to back down?" he shouted. I stood immobilized for a moment. "Are you getting out of my way?" I did not even make a conscious decision not to fall back. I simply couldn't even will myself to do so because I knew that he was not giving a lawful order and that if I stepped aside, it would be not because of the law, which I was following, but as a capitulation to sheer force. In that moment's hesitation, he said, "Okay," gestured, and my partner and I were surrounded by about 20 officers who pulled our hands behind our backs and cuffed us with plastic handcuffs. We were taken in a van to the 7th precinct. The scary part about that is that the protesters and lawyers marched to the 1st precinct, which handles Hudson Street, but in the van, the police got the message to avoid them by rerouting me. I understood later that the protesters were lied to about our whereabouts, which seemed to me to be a trickle-down of the Bush-era detention practice of unaccountable detentions. The officers who had us in custody were very courteous, and several expressed sympathy for the movement's aims. Nonetheless, my partner and I had our possessions taken from us, our ID copied, and we were placed in separate cells for about half an hour. It was clear that by then the police knew there was scrutiny of this arrest, so they handled us with great courtesy, but my phone was taken, and for half an hour I was in a feces or blood-smeared cell, thinking at that moment the only thing that separates civil societies from barbaric states is the rule of law that finds the prisoner and holds the arresting officers and courts accountable. Another scary outcome I discovered is that when the protesters marched to the first precinct, the whole of Erickson Street was cordoned off, frozen, they were told, by Homeland Security. Obviously, if Department of Homeland Security now has powers to simply take over a New York City street because of an arrest for peaceable conduct by a middle-aged writer in an evening gown, we have entered a stage of the closing of America, which is a serious departure from our days as a free republic in which municipalities are governed by police forces. The police are now telling my supporters that the permit in question gave the event managers control of the sidewalks. I've asked to see the permit, but still haven't been provided with it. If such a category now exists, I have never heard of it. That, too, is a serious blow to an open civil society. What did I take away? Just that, unfortunately, my partner and I became Exhibit A in a process that I've been warning Americans about since 2007. First, they come for the other, the, quote, terrorist, end quote, the brown person, the Muslim, the outsider, and then they come for you. Or you're standing on a sidewalk in an evening dress, obeying the law. Naomi Wolf, Bridget Wolf, sent that to me. One of our two ethics advisors to this program. Yeah. Well, we are in a quiet period, aren't we? Nobody is quite sure yet what to do. Not the authorities. In some areas, the authorities, like here in Atlanta, are backing down, extending the permits like they did in New York. Not extending a permit in New York, but refusing to go in and, quote, clean the park, end quote. I think Bloomberg had the crap scared out of him when he walked into Zuccotti Park and started telling people what was going to happen. He was surrounded. Here in Atlanta, Mayor Kasim Reed just said, look, there's nothing illegal about civil disobedience. And backed off until November 7th. Other places around the country, they're locking folks up. Even in New York, they're locking folks up. But so far, it's just been kind of like that. And one of the reasons, I think, is that corporate America, the capitalist ruling class in this country, is kind of holding its breath. Wait to see, okay, what's going to happen? Now, they're just conducting business as usual while they're waiting. And they are, if not scared, uncertain. This is something that they can't control. Why can't they control it? Because they don't know who leads it. They don't know how to identify. Occupation, what does that mean? And they can't attack the aims or goals of OWS because they're not written down somewhere. But if you don't know what the goals are, then you wouldn't have a clue even if they were written down. So it's a lull, not a calm before a storm, but a lull. And we'll see what happens. What I think should happen is several million of us should take to the streets, maybe 10 million, maybe 20 million. 30 million would only be 8%. We're the 99%, remember? We'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour, somebody wanted to know what's the name of that song, The Story in Your Eyes by the Moody Blues. The Story in Your Eyes. I'm trying to stay away from, and I've done a pretty good job, this contemptible, disgusting collection of morons on in Las Vegas last night, the Republican candidates. I swear to God, I have, I mentioned last night, I have yet in the entire length of my being politically aware, I've yet to see a panel of halfwits like this one. I mean, this is just astonishing, especially last night. I don't know where to begin, and I don't want to get too deep into this because I don't want to lose my mind. You know, this is one of those things that if you talk about it too much, it starts to filter into your brain, and all of a sudden you find that normal brain functions cease. I mean, to the point where you can lay your hand on a hot stove and there's so much garbage in the way, your brain doesn't say, get your hand off the stove! It's that bad. These people are horrible. 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 All of them. And like I said last night, half of them look like they've had all their blood sucked out. I've never seen anything like it. Mitt Romney, is this guy sleep in a cave, hanging upside down by his heels? Michelle Bachmann? Oh, my God. Is her husband a vampire? Does she cover up her neck to hide the marks? And Newt Gingrich, is there a whiter, pastier doughboy anywhere in American... Well, there's Haley Barbour. But, I mean, running for president. And Herman Cain, I've never seen a pale, creepy-looking black guy. I mean, this is astonishing. He looks all ashy. All these people. And who was the one? Oh, yeah, Ron Paul. Will somebody please buy the man a shirt with a collar that fits? How hard is that? Come on, Ron. Good God. I mean, it's one thing to be scrawny, but Jesus. You know, buy a boy size 14 or something, but stop with that look of you know, never mind. Jesus, and Sic Santorum, I have never seen a creep like Sic Santorum. Every time I look at him, I can't help but think about his famous story of how when his wife, gave birth to a dead fetus, if giving birth is the right term, Rick or Sick and his wife decided to bring this thing home so that their children, their living children, could hold it. Now, I don't give a damn what your religious beliefs are. That is just ghoulish. That is so creeped out. When I first heard that, my skin crawled. It's like, no, he didn't. Some Democrat made that up, right? No, 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 no. Aren't there laws? Where's he from? Pennsylvania? Aren't there laws about the proper disposal of a corpse? Does it include taking it home to let your kids hold it? Okay, look, having a stillbirth is a tragedy. We all know that. I had a good friend in Chicago that happened to. We know that. It's a terrible tragedy. But then for Rick or Sick to take this. These are the people who want to be president of the United States. I mean, to see Herman Cain up there. Herman Cain. Confronted with any kind of foreign policy problem, and his advisor saying things to him like, well, Herman, there is this, or Mr. President, I'm sorry, Herman, Mr. President, there is this terrible, terrible conflict in the Middle East that's been going on since the 1920s, and mostly immigrant Jews and mostly Palestinian Arabs and Muslims, and this terrible conflict, and we haven't been able to find a solution. And Herman's standing there saying, "You haven't looked at the problem right. You know, you've been acting like this is a static problem. It's a dynamic problem. Let me tell you about my 999. Here's what we do: we open up 9 new settlements on the West Bank, and then we have 9 Jews walk over and talk to 9 Palestinians. 999. That'll work. Next problem. What's the matter with you people? Next problem. Just call me Black Walnut today, because, you know, that's everybody's favorite. Jesus God. So I tried to avoid it. And Michelle Bachmann, what was she squealing about last night? I can't. You notice she's doing her hair different now. She's doing all rolled up like a school marm because somebody told me that somebody told her, Michelle, listen, when you go out on stage with your hair tousled like that, I swear to God, you look like a porn star. You've got to stop that. You've got to do something with the bedhead, the hair. You can't do that. It looks like you and Johnny Wad just had a romp. You've got to stop doing it.
Okay, I'll put it in a school marm thingy.
Jesus God. And I was hoping last night at one point when Rick Santorum, not him, to hell with him, when Mitt Romney reached over to Rick Perry and put his hand on Rick Perry's shoulder. And Rick Perry was just, I mean, you could almost see lizards crawling out of his mouth. Perry was so pissed off. You know, Perry is toast anyway. I mean, everybody knows that. Perry has an ice cube's chance in hell of being anything but this weak governor of Texas. The governor of Texas has no power to do a damn thing. Nothing. Zero. Zip. It's the legislature. It's a figurehead position. It's ceremonial. It means nothing. That's all Rick will ever do. Trust me on that. But when Mitt Romney reaches over with that big-ass Mormon hand of his and puts it on that fundamentalist Christian shoulder of Rick Perry, woo, Lord, religious wars, here we go. I knew it was going to happen. I just knew it. And Rick Perry's whole eyes got all narrow, and you could see his body language. He tightened up so much, I was afraid he was going to break in about 9 pieces. Just crack, 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 all the way down his body, old Rick Perry, right? And Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney. Oh, Mitt Romney. You know Mitt Romney's going to be the Republican Party's nominee. You just know it. I mean, that there is no question that he's going to be the one. You know, the big money is getting behind him because the rest of them are clowns, fools, knaves, and morons. We all know this. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Can you imagine Herman Cain as president, huh? What happened? They just launched missiles against us? Well, I've got this 999 plan. The missiles are where? They're coming over the North Pole. All right, here's what you do. I want you to launch 9 missiles at, what's that? What's the capital of Russia? What is that? Launch them. I want you to launch 9 missiles at the capital of the Chinese people. What is that one? Yokonoka. I don't know. And I want 9... No matter what comes up, old Herman Cain's got a 999, doesn't he, huh? He's got a 999 plan. It's just disgusting, contemptible, vile, a reflection of how far around the bend this country really has gone. A soldier quite like me. Not only does this job, but does it happily. I'm the fear that keeps you awake. I'm the shadows on the wall. I'm the monsters they become. I'm the nightmare in your skull. I'm the dagger in your back. An extra turn on the rack. I'm the whimpering of your heart. A static.
Here's Mikey.
That's what they remind me of, the Addams Family, these creeps, you know? I mean, they really do. And to me, the most fun part, like I said last night, was when it looked like the Texan and the guy from Massachusetts were about to duke it out. That just great. Let me get a word in! You know, whenever you have somebody saying that, when you have, like he said, what did he say? I get to talk to, or let me finish. I get a little time here. I mean, that makes you sound like your name is for real. Mitt. You know, that is so wimpish. What you should have done is just reached over, grabbed Rick Perry by his tie, jerked him over towards you, but not that hand on the shoulder crap, jerked him over towards you and just punched his lights out. Just bam! Right in his nose. Let me tell you something, pal. You would have got elected. You'd be elected leader immediately. They wouldn't even hold an election. It would just be Mitt Romney for president. Finally. Somebody just punches the lights out of one of these freaks. Of course, I'd prefer that, you know, Michelle Bachmann did that to you. But on the other hand, you know, that's what this takes. One of these debates... One of these, whatever you call them, they're not debates. One of these meetings of these 7, 8, 9, depending on the night, candidates. During one of these, Anderson Cooper or somebody's going to ask a question that's going to throw the whole stage into chaos. And it's going to be a pile on, and they're going to start slugging and kicking and stomping and biting and pulling hair. And those are the guys. And Michelle Bachmann will step up and start stomping people with those 8-inch high heels of hers. Whomp. It's just, I don't know. It's a reflection of us. That's the problem. That we have people like this. And you know what? You know what? We're running for the Republican nomination for president. But I was going to say a little bit earlier. I read something today that Herman Cain's old Godfather pizzas were referred to as Goodyear pizzas. They were so bad. It was like eating a tire. You know, it was like biting into a goddamn tire. Goodyear, Godfather Goodyear. Give me a Goodyear with a pepperoni on it. I mean, dear Lord. Now, Herman, you know, and occasionally Herman would go in and work one of the counter shifts, and somebody would say, I would like a pizza with pepperoni. And he'd say, now let me tell you something here. I've got a 999 pizza. It's got 9 different ingredients. It's 9 inches across, and you can have it in 9 seconds coming out of this oven back here. It's unbelievable. But you know what the major dust-up was about? This is just astonishing to me. Clinton went through this, too. Somebody had an undocumented, or as they love to say, an illegal worker. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, my God, no. An illegal worker mowing his lawn. That was the big issue. You know, that's what Perry comes up with. Here's a guy who is the toy governor of a state that probably has more undocumented workers than they have legal residents with the proper papers. And how many times do you suppose in whatever incarnation Rick Perry has enjoyed over the course of his life, how many times do you suppose he's had an illegal worker on his property? This is nonsense. This is insanity. So Mitt Romney has a landscaping company come to his house and do the yard or whatever the hell they do. And it turns out the landscaping company. Why, of course, every landscaping company in America hires undocumented workers. I mean, what are you going to hire? Who are you going to hire? If not undocumented dark-skinned workers to go to work for you. Who? Who's going to get out there? Show me an American citizen with, you know, Caucasian skin. Who's going to go out there and spread pine straw? Who's going to do that for $6.50 an hour? You going to do it? Is he going to do it? She going to do it? You scum-sucking Republicans, instead of celebrating the fact that you gave somebody a job, you go after each other's jugulars because they are, as you call them, illegal. How in the hell can someone be illegal? They may be undocumented, but they are human beings. They work. Why are they here? They're here because, among other things, Bill Clinton and George Herbert Walker Bush's NAFTA plan destroyed their local economies. So they're here looking for a job. Oh, I know. Let's bust them. How many has Barack Obama rounded up and sent back to Mexico so far since he's been president, huh? 800,000? A million? A million two? You filthy Republican swine. You really are.
The voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, this, I think it's probably good for America to see this constant parade of Republican freaks who insist that they know how to run the country. Oh, my God. And it speaks volumes that these are the people who have been selected or have selected themselves to run for the presidency of the United States. I think it speaks volumes as to the absolute pit that this country has sunk into. And it's it really is a shame. It doesn't have to be this way. We have people in this country who could run the country. And I'm not talking about Republicans. There's not a Republican in America who, in these times, who is capable of managing a society of 330 million people who are going through a transitional period that is far-reaching and long-lasting. You know, this American exceptionalism hogwash is over. We spent two centuries convincing ourselves that there was something uniquely wonderful about being an American. And I don't know what that was, because we are a nation of immigrants, either invaders or slaves. That's what we are. People were not, white people and black people were not born here. This is not like Sweden or Greece or China. You know, we invaded, we being Caucasians, Europeans, and some who are not so Caucasian, invaded this country. It belonged to somebody else. It belonged to Native Americans, so-called indigenous people, if you want to get all what's the word I'm looking for? Not anthropomorphic, but if you want to get authentic about it, anthropological, that's what I was trying to think of. So this country, you know, what made it exceptional? Was it this crazed Christian theory of manifest destiny that, I don't know, God decided to murder millions of people who already lived here, murder them and reduce them to living on reservations, so-called, actually concentration camps. And that also then millions more were going to be dragged over here in chains to do the hard labor so that this thing called capitalism could take root. This devil's tool called capitalism. I mean, this is, it's madness. So, you know, for two centuries, we spent all of our resources convincing each other that somehow we were exceptional. The rest of the world could go suck. We were the ones designated by God, according to the religious freaks, to crush, destroy, manipulate, control, invade, occupy, murder, kill anything and anybody in our path. Because we were, you know, exceptional. I mean, how arrogant is that? How sick is that? And how much resentment, global cross-generational resentment has built up. You know, these people in United States think that they are exceptional. How so? Because their bombs are bigger? They have more nuclear weapons? So, to listen to these Republicans stand up there and whack each other with the most nonsensical verbal insults and attacks and I mean it's like watching children. There is not a person among them, among this group, who says anything that is current, that is forward looking, that is reality based. None of them. Go ahead, tell me one. Go ahead. The 999 guy? Oh, give me a goddamn break. Newt Gingrich? Michelle Bachmann? Sick Santorum? This is the, I think it just absolutely, if nothing else, displays the poverty of the political class in this country. The absolute lack of any kind of qualified organizer, not a leader. You know, we don't need a leader anymore. We need an organizer. We need people who, and we don't need one person. This cult of personality crap. I mean, where are we? In China in the 50s? We don't need this anymore. What we, you know what we need? I'll tell you what we need. Oh, go ahead, Mike. What do we need? What we need is a governing committee. That's what we need. How about, I don't know, pick a number, like the 12. There you go, the 12 disciples. Let's have a ruling body of 12 that is as representational as possible. And all the decisions that they make have to be made by consensus. Woo-hoo! And the only qualifier on this 12 is that they cannot be religious. They have to be secular. They have to be scientific. They have to be real. They don't talk about spooks flying through the air and religious superstition and I own this because God gave it to me. No, you don't. Allah gave it to me. No, you don't. Christ walked here. It's mine. Woo! Lord have mercy. Yeah, a governing body of 12. How do we get to 12? Well, the proportional voting. What else are you going to do? You know, just get 25 names on a ballot and let her rip. You come up with 12. Mike, that sounds like the Politburo. Mike, that sounds very communistic. Oh, shut up and sit down. If you don't get the concept, you don't get the concept. I'm not going to be like the pizza man and explain it to you. Well, 999, now here's what that means. If you think it means 999, you're wrong. It doesn't mean 999. I just say 999. You got to go back and look at this in a dynamic way, not a static way. We've had all kinds of economists look at 999, and they tell us it's exactly what it is. Now, if you don't understand it, that's too bad. Next question. Oh, my God. Okay. I got it out of my system. Talking about these morons. I think I got it out of my system. Man. I mean, we have enough trouble with the faux Democrat that's sitting in the White House. You know, at least you can listen to him talk. I mean, you can. I watched yesterday at some point, on Nightline last night. That's what it was. The interview that, who's the ABC guy? Terry Moran. No, he's the host of the program. The White House correspondent for ABC. I can't think of his name. Doesn't matter. You know, I mean, you know who I mean. But anyway, he got on the big black bus and was traveling around with Obama and interviewing him. And when he and Obama sit there and talk, and this is the essential difference for me, just for me, between Obama and these clowns that stand up there and put their hands on each other and scream about who hired the last illegal immigrant. And, oh, I'll tell you what it is. It's 999. When Obama is talking one-on-one like that, you sense his personableness. And, I get a sense that he's not governing the way he'd like to. Some part of him. But, you know, that so what? I mean, Obama is what he is. And he refuses to be the kind of leader that the United States needs right now. And for that, he can be thrown out of office and let's bring in one of these fascists and see what happens. If the United States, if we voters in this country have decided that we don't care who runs our voting machines, if we have decided we don't care when the Supreme Court declares a halt to the voting and that the Republican gets the election, if we The American voter have decided we don't care to the extent of putting millions of us in the street how much we get raped and pillaged by the banking industry. If we have come to that point, then okay, why not just go ahead, sit back, and let the Republicans, the fascists, have it. Maybe that will tip us all into violent, crazed, foaming at the mouth, pitchforks and staves revolution, and get it settled for once and for all. You think? Nah, that probably wouldn't work either. Before the hour, did you see this thing in the paper the other day? The Obama administration is giving millions of dollars in aid, new aid, to Libya. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is, I love the way this sentence put together, encouraging the country's unsteady new leadership to commit to a democratic future free of retribution. How many ideas are contained in just that one sentence? Oh, I see. And money's going to do it. There you go. Millions upon millions upon millions of dollars to Libya. Why? Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. I forgot. The oil. And the Clinton made a statement in here that I think fully exposes the attitude of the leadership of this country. I don't care who the leadership is. It can be these filthy, disgusting Republicans, or it can be the filthy, disgusting Democrats. It doesn't make any difference. But Clinton was talking to a bunch of Libyan students. Of course, that's about half the population of that country. Libyan students and others at what was described as a town hall style gathering in Tripoli. And she said this about Muammar Gaddafi. She said, quote, "We hope he can be captured or killed soon so that you don't have to fear him any longer," end quote. We hope he can be captured or killed soon. This is like, you know, this American exceptionalism now has got to the point where we just hunt people down and murder them in the street. And the really weird part is so many Americans agree with that idea. Just hunt them down. Doesn't matter who it is. Hunt them down. Kill them. Just go find them. Put a drone missile up their ass, or you know, go into their compound with a hit squad, or just find them and execute them on the road to Damascus, on the road to Baghdad, on the road to Tripoli. It doesn't make any difference. Just kill them. Just go ahead and kill them. We hope he, Gaddafi, can be captured or killed soon. And up until that point, according to what I have here, the U.S. government has generally avoided saying that Gaddafi should be killed. U.S. officials usually say they want to see somebody brought to justice, right? And Clinton also said to these students, quote, "I am proud to stand here on the soil of a free Libya." Really? Is that what Libya is now? It's a free Libya. I see. Okay. Then she goes on and says, the United States was proud to stand for you in your fight for freedom. And we will continue to stand with you as you continue this journey. Wow. Really? How about standing with the Palestinian people? How about standing with any one of several different groups of people on the continent of Africa who are being systematically butchered and murdered? Oh, I know. We just sent 100 troops into Uganda. Okay,
that's really wonderful.
Why don't we order NATO strikes against the so-called, is it the... Army of God, or the group in Central Africa that is just murdering, raping, and pillaging, and has been for the past 25 years. The aid package that Hillary is giving, I'm sorry, the aid package that Secretary of State Clinton is giving to, Mahmoud Jibril, he is the leader of Libya's Transitional National Council. It's a package of about $11 million, which now raises what the U.S. has given to these folks to $135 million since February, when right around the time when we decided to start bombing that country to get the oil. And this new aid package includes money to buy weapons. Why, of course. What do you think it would be for? Seeds? Trees? A new flock of goats? Are goats come in a flock? I don't know. No, it's for new weaponry. And where do you suppose they're going to buy the weapons? From the Russians? From the Brits? From the French? The Chinese? Money for more instruments of death. Yoo-hoo! Of course, a lot of people fear that this new weaponry could fall into the hands of terrorists. Oh, my God, they're everywhere. Now, we're not terrorists. Keep that in mind. When the United States goes in and starts bombing and killing and zapping and sending missiles down people's chimneys and killing people at roadblocks and blowing folks up. And we're not terrorists. We're not. We are doing God's work. Capitalism, well, it's the same thing. We are doing the capitalist God's work. But the U.S. better be careful with all this weaponry. You know, they could fall into the hands of, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, the wrong people. Right? Huh? And Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said after meeting with the transitional leaders, quote, now the hard part begins, end quote. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.